This is Vincent Price. Hear that? Thunder. A storm out there somewhere. The beginning of a mood. Uneasiness. And that. What was it? Something outside trying to get in? Someone outside? The hair rises on the back of your neck. Our story has those elements. Listen.
That is the sound of a movie projector. I doubt that any of us will ever forget the absolute wonder we felt when we saw our first movie, silent or talking. How strange it all was. The fixed rows of theater seats facing one direction, forward toward that large silver-white screen hanging on the front wall. And oh, how justified was the almost religious attention which we and our fellow members of the audience showered upon that silver screen when the theater went dark. Because when the theater went dark, that screen came alive. People 10 feet tall talked, walked, and performed other physical feats infinitely more intriguing than our own lives. What secret magic was this that could create such absolute wonder? With maturity, and I dare say a good number of movies under our belts, we discovered the process behind movie magic. Those 10-foot giants up on the screen were images produced by the light from a motion picture projector. These images were the captured actions of people telling a story through a series of moving photographs called film. Whether we realized it or not, we enjoyed being held helpless witnesses to the sensations movies induced. Laughter, tears, anger, fear. The evening's final screening of Hollywood's latest blockbuster has just ended. The audience files out of the theater exits, sharing their comments, their judgments. The ushers will clean up the theater before turning out the house lights and going home themselves. Night after night, this scene is repeated before the silent silver screen. That poor silent screen could tell so many stories if it only had a memory. Imagine one tiny theater somewhere in the world which did possess a memory. What stories would such a theater tell? And to whom and for what reason would it speak?
And that's only the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, Freeze Frame, by Bruce Martin. Our stars, Vic Perrin and Lou Horn.
The stage is set for innocence to be altered, for something evil to happen.
Innocence and evil. They're the key elements in the story I'm about to tell you. I didn't hear about this first scene until after it happened, but it belongs up front here so you can understand how it all began. Imagine a rain-slicked street in West Los Angeles. The time is 3 minutes past midnight. A sports car makes a sharp, hazardous left-hand turn, then speeds off down the street. The car's driver is Russell Long, a 34-year-old entertainment critic for a local Los Angeles television station. I'm his editor and his friend. I'll be turning up later. Right now, Russ is in trouble, as you can hear.
Oh, hell, not tonight.
Do you have any idea what the speed limit is on this street?
Oh, I don't know, 35? Officer, would you mind shining that flashlight someplace else?
Do you have any idea how fast you were going?
40? Oh, really, man, that light's killing my eyes.
Try 55. Do you consider yourself college educated?
Oh, come on, give me a break. I just had a fight with my wife.
And a couple of drinks, maybe?
Yeah, I had a couple. Right after the wife and I didn't kiss and make up. Look, that flashlight's really annoying. I mean, it's not like I killed anybody, you know.
Recite the alphabet.
Oh, I can tell you're going to top my evening. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K,
What's the matter? Didn't they teach you the alphabet in college?
LMNOPQRSNTUVW and XYZ.
Okay. Let's see your license and registration.
The registration's in the glove compartment.
I can wait.
I'll send LAPD the bill for my eye examination. Oh, here.
The department has very little sympathy for drunk drivers, Mr. Long. Is that you, Russell Long?
Yeah, that's me. Now, look, I made a bad turn back there, but I am not drunk. My wife's talking about a separation, and I'm a little upset.
I know how that goes. Me and my old lady used to fight for days.
Don't I know you from someplace?
Probably the Beverly Hills Country Club. I caddy on weekends.
No, your face. I couldn't see it before when you were shining your flashlight in my eyes.
Oh, skip it, huh? I've heard this old pal routine before.
You're him.
Hey, relax. I'm not writing you up for doing 55 and a 35.
What do you want from me?
In fact, I'm not writing you up at all.
You're the one, aren't you?
Oh, drop it already. I'm with you. I know how nutso a guy can get when his old lady puts him in the doghouse.
No, answer me.
Do yourself a favor. Don't press your luck.
Listen, I lied. I'm stinking drunk. If you're a cop, then take me in. Who are you? What do you want? What do you want from me?
Hello?
Peggy, it's Jason.
Oh, hi, Jason. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. It's Russ I'm worried about. He hasn't called in sick or anything, but no one's seen any sign of your gifted husband. Our generalissimo station manager's been screaming for his head all morning.
Russ and I are on the outs, I'm afraid. We had a very loud fight last night.
Regular 15-rounder, huh?
Yeah. We didn't spend the night under the same roof. He hasn't called me either this morning.
Well, not yet he hasn't. I'm sure he'll come home soon, surprise you with roses or something.
I've had my share of surprises from Russ the past few weeks. None of them pleasant.
If you're seeking a sympathetic ear...
I am, Jason. Russ hasn't been his old charming self for quite a while.
I suppose that's the reason he's been so quiet.
You too? I thought it was just me he was ignoring.
No, unfortunately his work falls into that same category.
He's never mentioned it, not once. I was blaming a lot of our problems on Russ's pressures down at the station, but now you tell me he hasn't been working.
Oh, it's not like he's retired, but his work certainly hasn't been up to par. I probably shouldn't worry you this way, but if Russ doesn't shape up, you'd be hearing about it from Herb, and that'd be worse.
No, please. I want to know what's going on.
His reviews, even his interviews, have been nothing short of insipid. It's totally out of character for him.
Well, this may sound strange, but I'd be very happy if work were the only part of Russ's life that was out of character.
What's come over him?
I'm not sure I know. Whatever it is, it isn't good.
Well, you must have some idea. He's been behaving like a closet alcoholic.
Jason, I wish I knew. It's so hard to understand, and it's getting to be a little frightening.
What is?
I don't mean to be evasive. It's just...
I'm good at keeping secrets, you know that. It's hard to cover for him with Herb when I'm left in the dark.
Oh, it's gotten to the point where I have to tell someone. Russ thinks somebody's been following him.
Who?
Some man.
Well, what for?
Russ doesn't know why, but he's so insistent about it. It's all he talks about anymore.
Oh, man, he sounds a bit paranoid.
No, Jason, not just a bit. This obsession of his with this stranger is driving us apart. And the worst part is, I can't get Russ to talk rationally about it.
Russ, open up. I know you're in there. Come on, Russ.
Who told you?
Charlene. She said you've been locked in there with a second reel of stagecoach since 6 o'clock this morning. What the devil are you doing in that editing room?
Taking an opinion poll.
Oh, for crying out loud, Russ.
Herb's been screaming for your head all morning.
Well, Herb can jog his tiny little feet right off the end of Santa Monica Pier.
Charlene's threatening to tell Herb where you are. Herb will fire you this time.
Charlene promised not to tell anyone.
Well, she doesn't want to lose her job, and she needs her editing room to meet a deadline.
Tell Charlene I'll be out in a few minutes.
Russ, are you okay?
Oh, terrific. There's nothing bothering me.
Pretty kettle of fish, as my grandmother used to say. She meant that everything was at sixes and sevens. You understand.
But what I didn't understand was why my friend Russ had locked himself in an editing room with the second reel of John Ford's classic Western Stagecoach. Why only the second reel? And what was he planning to do with it? Russ, open up. Charlene's got two film crews coming in with deadlines to meet.
Boo.
Oh, very funny.
You look like you were expecting a werewolf to step out of here instead of me.
I didn't know what to expect. Where are you off to now?
Someplace that's got coffee, a couple of slices of bread with something in between. Maybe a side order of surf and turf.
How about telling me about the second reel of Stagecoach first,
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you already saw it.
Oh, the rest of you may be changing, but not your sarcasm. It still doesn't have any wit.
Touché.
Who do you think covered your television review for you?
Oh, you did that, Turkey?
To my everlasting shame.
Yeah, well, I guess I do owe you an explanation.
You owe me a lot more than that, but I'll settle for an explanation.
Peggy and I had a rotten fight last night. I hunted around for a project to keep my mind off her and came up with this Stagecoach thing. I'm preoccupied, nothing more.
So I noticed. Your hands are trembling.
Well, I didn't sleep much.
Or you're working on something that's frightened the air out of your lungs.
Peggy told you.
I called her earlier looking for you. She's very upset.
Now look, my personal problems are none of your business.
When your personal problems affect your work, they become my business. Your hands are shaking so bad you can't even light your own cigarette.
If people would leave me alone around here, maybe I wouldn't be so edgy.
If people keep leaving you alone, you won't be around here anymore. Come on. I'll buy you a cup of coffee in the office. One coffee, black.
Thanks.
Now, care to expound on the importance of the second reel of Stagecoach? Or do I just go on thinking your mind has gone out to seed?
I am not crazy.
Okay. Don't take me so seriously.
After I tell you what's been happening to me, you think I am crazy.
I knew you were crazy the day you started reviewing that dribble they call television.
Look, light me a cigarette, will you?
So, you believe this cop who stopped you last night is the same guy who's been following you, like the taxi driver you mentioned?
Yes. Jason, I was stinking drunk, cursing at the top of my lungs, and this cop still let me go. I told him to take me downtown, for God's sake.
Did you get his badge number?
I told you, I was drunk. By the time I realized who he was already getting in the squad car.
Well, if he ran a radio check on your license...
He couldn't run a radio check on my license or anybody else's.
Because you don't believe he was a real cop, right?
No, because I don't believe he exists. It sounds crazy, doesn't it?
I don't find much sanity in that statement. Do you?
I am not crazy.
That is the second time you've reminded me.
Well, the more I tell you my story, the easier it is to forget.
It's agreed. You are in your right mind. Now, that leaves three other possibilities. One, you saw a certified policeman. Two, you saw someone who wasn't certified LAPD but wanted you to think he was. Or I think, taking into account the emotional stress of your fight with Peggy and your inebriated condition, you hallucinated the whole episode.
It wasn't a hallucination. He spoke to me. I touched his hand when I gave him my ID.
Then we can assume he does exist.
Well, if you believe phantoms exist, then he exists.
There are people in this world who are skilled at making other people believe they are phantoms. For example, yourself of late, whenever you have an assignment that's due.
Jason, Do you believe in ghosts?
Oh, you're losing me again. Maybe you should continue this conversation with someone who can keep up with you, someone better trained at irrational behavior.
I knew you'd end up suggesting a psychiatrist. Isn't that the point of this whole conversation?
Nobody mentioned a psychiatrist.
Yeah, well, I considered one.
And?
And after what I found this morning, I know a shrink couldn't help me.
You're talking about the second reel of Stagecoach. What does your phantom have to do with that?
He's in it.
You found his face in the film?
That's right. I cut out a damn good picture of him in the editing room on the Moviola. Same age, same build. He's wearing a cavalry hat.
You found him in the charge scene, then?
Yeah. Third extra over from the bugler.
I hope you're kidding.
No, I'm not. It's pretty incredible, huh?
Not at all. I heard this exact storyline last week at Universal. How did you know your policeman was an extra in Stagecoach?
Oh, I see. Oh, you think it's real convenient of me finding my phantom in a 40-year-old film.
Now, if you'd stop being so defensive, Russ, you'd realize I'm only asking the same questions anyone else would. And yes, I do think it's remarkably convenient, if not utterly implausible.
Oh, damn it, I know what I found.
Wonderful. Tell me the whole story, okay?
You are really pushing me, Jason.
I am. Besides being your editor, I consider myself your friend.
Okay. I spent the night in a motel on Little Santa Monica. $12 room. Even had an antique black and white TV set. I was too upset to sleep. I had Peggy on my mind, sure. But him, he was what wouldn't let me sleep. And guess what the station aired on the 1 a.m. movie last night?
Oh, that one's obvious. Stagecoach. You took the print from Charlene into the editing room when you came in early this morning.
Yes. I don't remember actually seeing his face while I was watching the movie last night. It was more of a feeling.
Sort of a premonition.
More than that. I knew I'd find his face somewhere in that film if I looked for it. Look, do you remember that Return of the Ringo Kid piece I did about 3 months ago?
The sequel to Stagecoach Paramount was shooting. Herb sent you out to the valley with a film crew, didn't he?
Yeah. We went to the Belton Stables in Chatsworth. John Ford had used some Chatsworth locations in Stagecoach, and Paramount naturally wanted to cash in on the nostalgia publicity.
Well, so did Herb, if I remember.
While I was out at the stables, I saw him. This guy for the first time. For the first time that I remember, anyway. He worked as a cowboy extra in the Ringo Kid sequel.
Well, how many times have you seen him since then?
Five that I'm aware of. Who knows how many times he was watching me when I didn't know it.
What do you think he wants?
Me.
I'm not arguing with you now, Russ. You probably don't even have an answer for this. But why you? What makes you so important you get this supernatural visitor spying on you?
You're right. I don't have an answer for that. I just know he wants me. The same way I knew I'd find his face in the second reel of Stagecoach.
Now we're in a pickle. The kettle of fish is spilled, and the sixes and sevens are scrambled. Is there no way out?
Suppose you found yourself encountering a stranger on an infrequent but recurring basis. A stranger whose face seems buried somewhere in your past, but for the life of you, you can't remember where. Add to this disturbing situation the fact that each time you see this stranger, he appears comfortably settled in a different occupation. First, you notice him as a cowboy actor, then as a taxi driver, then a policeman. Now, imagine your shock when you discover his face. You're absolutely certain it's the same face in a 40-year-old movie. That's the puzzle my friend Russ is trying to solve.
Settle down, girl. Gotta cool off before you can drink.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hayes.
Well, that it is, young fella. A right beautiful day.
We met once. I'm Russell Long.
I remember. You're the TV fella that was out here 2-3 months ago.
Yeah, that's me, all right.
My body might be sagging, but there ain't nothing wrong with what I got upstairs. What can I do for you?
I'm doing a story on an actor. An extra, actually, who might have worked here about 40 years ago.
You really are digging up the past, ain't you?
Yeah, I'm hoping I'll get lucky. I had this picture blown up from the charge scene in Stagecoach. The man I'm doing the story on is the third one over from the Bugler.
Charge scenes wasn't filmed around here. Mr. Ford used Monument Valley up in Utah.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I first met the Duke when Mr. Ford brought his Stagecoach crew here to Chatsworth. Of course, nobody called John Wayne the Duke then. Fine young man he was. Made a great Ringo Kid.
Yeah, that must have been quite a thrill. The Duke was the best. You don't remember meeting this man, though, do you?
Let me have a closer look at that picture of yours. No. Nope, that face there means nothing to me.
I wish I could say the same, but that face won't leave me alone. Isn't there some way of finding out if he ever worked for the Belton Stables?
This story's real important, huh?
It could be the most important story of my life.
Well, you come to the right place to do your digging. Just follow me. I gotta walk this filly into the barn. This album here has the pictures of every hand that worked the Belton Stables between 1933 and 1940. Salute. Hope you ain't allergic to the dust. Ain't too often anybody comes in here anymore.
Yeah. Oh, I think this tack room is terrific.
More mausoleum than tack room these days. I'd guess that most of the old hands in these photographs are dead now.
Well, the man I'm looking for isn't dead. Oh, hey, go back a page.
Listen?
Yeah, right there.
Well, what do you know? It sure looks like the fella you're after.
It's him, all right.
His Stagecoach was made in 39, so I was thumbing through the picture album until we come to 39. It's a lucky thing you was paying attention. Say, you feel all right? You're looking white as a ghost.
Yeah, well, I'm fine. What year was this picture taken?
Well, let's see. We're in 37. It must have been one cocky fella autographed his own picture.
Ward Egan.
I guess my memory ain't as all get out as I'd like to think it is. Ward Egan. Now, I don't remember the name or the face. I'm sorry.
No. You've been a big help. Yeah, finding Egan's name has been a big help.
Now, just follow me, Peggy. You sit in a dark screening room for a couple of hours, usually alone, watching fictional characters act out fictional events. And you squeeze your mind, quite often to its limits, searching for those tiny traces of reality which will make those fictional characters real to an audience. Now, the psychological pressure...
No, I see what you're leading to, and I don't agree. Russ is not losing his grip on reality. Did you consider that someone really may be following him?
Yes, but Peggy, Russ believes the man who's been following him is the same man who played as an extra in Stagecoach 40 years ago.
Well, we should help Russ find this old man and confront him. Then we'd get some answers.
No. Russ insists, and I mean insists, that this man hasn't aged in 40 years. He has the same build, the same face as the extra he found in a 40-year-old film. He's absolutely convinced it's the same man.
I can't believe this. Jason, what are we going to do?
Well, that's what I wanted to discuss. I know an excellent psychiatrist who I'm certain can help Russ.
I guess you're right. He does need help.
Has he called you yet?
No.
Well, when he does, get him to come home and then give me a call. We'll get Russ the help he needs and we'll make sure nobody but the three of us will ever know about it. Entertainment desk.
Jason, it's Russ.
Well, the wanderer checks in. Where are you?
Never mind where I am. Jason, I know his name. Ward Egan.
Ward Egan, huh? Oh, that's great.
I went out to the Belton Stables. They have this dusty old tack room crammed with movie memorabilia. Oh, creepy, though. Real creepy.
What made it creepy, Russ?
It took us a while to find the right scrapbook, the one with Egan's picture in it. I spotted it first.
The page was being turned, and I just stuck my finger out right on Egan's picture. I felt this real weird chill, like somebody poured a bucket of ice water over me.
All right, you accomplished your detective work. Call it a day. Peggy called again. She's anxious to see you.
Yeah, I called Peggy a little while ago. We're meeting for a drink in half an hour.
Oh, good.
Do me a favor, Jason.
I'm not covering any more boob tube reviews for you. The haunted aquarium is your domain.
No. Look in the bottom right-hand drawer of my desk.
All right. What am I looking for?
Just tell me what you see. It definitely stands out.
Well, I don't see very much in here. A bunch of papers. Wait a minute. There's a directory.
No. Oh, I must have left it in the trunk of my car, then.
Russ? What was it he kept in this drawer? Hey, under the directory. That's where... God almighty. What did he take his gun for? Peggy. Oh, you better be there, Peggy.
When you said Boyle Heights on the phone, I never dreamed you meant this section.
I like the atmosphere in this bar.
The atmosphere comes from the slums outside the door and the derelicts in here.
This used to be Ward Egan's neighborhood.
Oh. Huh. I suppose I should have guessed that was why you wanted to meet here for a drink. Honey, I think it's morbid to be so obsessed with someone you never knew that you make me drink my scotch and water in his old neighborhood bar. Let's go home.
No. You want to hear how Egan died? I found out a lot about him today.
Russ, please.
Some joker shot him to death over a woman. He was 32 years old.
I had hoped. I really hoped that you wanted to meet me so we could talk about last night, work out our problems, and make up.
I asked you to meet me here so you'd see him.
Him?
Yeah. I'm waiting for Egan to show. When you see him, then you'll know I am not crazy.
Give me your hand. Come on, give it to me. Now, I think the two of us should talk to a doctor. Just tell him how we feel and what's been happening to us.
What for?
You sit there telling me you're waiting to meet a dead man. Honey, don't you think you need help?
I brought help, and I'm going to prove to you I am not crazy. Look out the window. See that man across the street?
That bum in the raincoat? You know him?
That's Ward Egan.
It's almost dark. You can't tell who that is.
I don't have to see his face to know it's Egan. He's waiting for me.
Vincent Price again, and here's the fourth act of our story.
Look, Egan turned the corner.
Russ, following that bum up ahead doesn't make sense.
Oh, he moves fast.
Don't ignore me.
You're the one who isn't listening, Peggy. There is no rational explanation for Egan's ghost, or whatever that thing is walking ahead of us.
Russ, that's a man up there, not a ghost. Ghosts don't exist.
Well, this one does, and I'm going to get it before it gets me.
The way he's dressed, he belongs on Skid Row, but not in a graveyard.
He stopped at that streetlight. Let's see what he does.
All right. All right, he wants you to follow him. He's luring you someplace. Honey, let's do the smart thing. Let's get the hell out of here.
Oh, I can't run from him. He'll only come back again. Don't worry, Egan. I'm coming. Oh, did you see what he did?
Oh, he smiled. Russ, I'm frightened. I want you to take me home.
Oh, come on. Egan's heading up the next street.
Will you please listen to me?
I wanted you to see him, to know he was real. Listen, you have your car. You go home. I'll be all right.
Okay, I'll believe he's a ghost, but why follow him? Make him come to you. We can get help.
Oh, nobody can help me. I have to do this myself.
Why you? Why does he want you?
Well, luck of the draw, I guess. I brought a gun.
Honey, please. We'll go together and talk to someone. Someone who...
No, just take the car and go home, Peggy.
What good will a gun do you against the ghosts? Ghosts are already dead.
Egan's ghost has a physicalness. I saw him ride a horse at the Belton Stables. I actually touched him. When I handed him my ID last night for that speeding ticket, I touched him.
We had a fight last night. You were drunk.
Well, whether he bleeds or not is something I'm going to find out. Egan just walked into that deserted movie theater. Oh. Let go of me.
You'd shoot him? Oh, Russ, don't!
Stay out of this.
Don't! Don't! You could be shooting the wrong man in that theater.
You saw him smile.
They'll put you in jail or an asylum.
Oh, I know what I'm doing. Oh,
please, please, put the gun away.
Oh, what a mess. This isn't a theater. It's a garbage dump.
It hasn't been occupied for years.
Oh, yes, it has. Look at that door to the lobby. It's partly open. Egan must be just inside.
Oh, please, Russ, come home. Do it for me.
I'm waiting in the theater, Bond.
My name's not Bonds, Egan.
What?
I've waited a long time, Bonds.
Well, you won't have to wait any longer.
Russ, who are you talking to?
Egan, can't you hear him?
It's me, Russ. Peggy, you're talking to Peggy.
You were always the type to hide behind the skirts of a woman, Bonds.
Out of my way, Peggy.
No! Russ, don't go in.
Egan! Egan!
Oh, God, no. Oh. Russ! Who is it?
Jason.
I suppose you're checking up on me again.
Not this time. I brought something I think you should see.
Come on in.
I tried calling you at work, but your supervisor said you left early.
I had a slight relapse. I'm feeling better now. Would you like something to drink?
Peggy, are you aware you're crying?
No.
Let's sit down. You're having one of your I miss Russ spells again, aren't you?
Yes. I'm not handling Russ's death very well.
You are a lot tougher than you think.
I was sitting at my desk looking up licorice in the dictionary when one of the girls told me. I couldn't remember how to spell licorice. I didn't even realize my tears were falling on the page. The police called earlier.
Anything new?
Yes. They think they've come up with a motive.
They found the man you followed into the movie theater?
No. They found a bag of heroin stuffed into one of the seats in the theater.
Heroin?
The police believed the theater was the site of a heroin buy. Russ walked in on the dealers and they shot him.
Yeah, in that neighborhood, something like that isn't just possible, it's probable. They still don't know the identity of the man you and Russ followed?
No. No witnesses. The police told me that that isn't unusual for Boyle Heights either. I wish I'd never agreed to meet Russ there.
Oh, then he'd have gone alone.
You didn't see how desperate he was for me to believe in Egan's ghost. Now it's too late. Now I believe, but I still can't bring myself to tell the police. They'd never believe me because I hardly believe it myself. I just know what I think I saw.
I honest to God don't believe there was anything you or I or anyone else could have done to prevent Russ's death.
I really have to work on stopping these crying spells.
Take a look at these pictures I brought.
Okay, I'll try.
I followed up on the research Russ did on Ward Egan.
Uh-huh.
I hope what you see will help you stop blaming yourself for playing a part in Russ's death.
That's the picture Russ edited out of Stagecoach.
Yeah. And this other one is a studio still I dug up through a friend of mine at the Screen Actors Guild. Ward Egan played a small part as a cop in a 1936 gangster film.
That other policeman in the picture, the one behind the wheel.
He looks like Russ, doesn't he?
Yes. The resemblance is amazing.
That actor's name was Tom Bonds.
That's the name Russ said just before he went into the movie theater. He yelled, "My name isn't Bonds."
Yes, I remembered you told me about that when I read Bonds' name on the back of the picture.
I thought Russ was out of his mind hearing voices.
Don't ask me to explain it, but it's just possible Russ did hear a voice you couldn't hear.
Are you saying the man we followed to the old movie theater really was Ward Egan's ghost?
Yes. I found an old Times article to go with that photo. Here.
Why, this is a murder story.
Peggy, in October of 1940, Thomas Bonds shot and killed a fellow actor named Ward Egan. They were in love with the same woman. Bonds was sent to the gas chamber for Egan's murder.
What does that have to do with Ross?
Bonds shot Egan in the very same Boyle Heights movie theater where Russ was murdered. Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life's star, hath had elsewhere its setting, and cometh from afar. My friend Russell Long, the Tom Bonds of an earlier lifetime and the late protagonist of my story, might have done well to ponder William Wordsworth's poetic speculation on reincarnation. Sadly, the idea of a connection between past events creating the terror Russell confronted in the present never occurred to him. He blindly assumed that Ward Egan's ghost was terrorizing him for no other reason than random chance. And blindly, he followed Egan's ghost to his death in the same Boyle Heights movie theater where Egan had died four decades earlier. At this point, you may desire some explanation for the connection between Egan's spectral revenge and Tom Bond's reincarnation as Russell Long. After all, supernatural revenge and reincarnation are most often considered strange but exclusive events. The explanation I offer is based upon the nature of reincarnation itself. We all know the basic tenet of reincarnation, that souls out of the past, with all traces of their prior lifetimes forgotten, are reintroduced into the scope of contemporary humanity. Just what determines which souls return to Earth at what time remains a mystery. But imagine a soul which returns before its appointed time. Such a premature return would require some cosmic action, a correction of sorts. Perhaps Ward Egan's revenge can be understood in this light. Tom Bond's violent soul returns to Earth far ahead of its appointed time. Couldn't this event provide Ward Egan's soul the opportunity to arrange his revenge for the unjust death he received at Tom Bond's hands in his previous lifetime? Well, it's only a private speculation. But don't forget it. If you ever notice a disturbingly familiar but unnameable face that seems to be following you.
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you five nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, Freeze Frame, was written by Bruce Martin and produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Vincent Price. Our stars were Vic Perrin and Lou Horn. Featured in the cast were Janet Waldo and Parley Bear. John Harlan speaking. The Elliot Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
Cicely Tyson. Tomorrow at the same time, I'll bring you this week's romantic drama, a new play as unpredictable as love itself.